Well, hello and welcome to an outside broadcast of the Two Tones. Tony DeMolfo and Tony Moclair.
Greetings, Tony. A very special edition of the Two Tones podcast this week, is it not?
It is. Well, where do we find ourselves, Tone? Set the scene.
We find ourselves at Isle Hannah, Isle 13, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
We are at Etihad Stadium. We are about to join the masses, 600 people in all, at the Carlton Football Club's Hall of Fame function and reunion of the 1968 Premiership team 50 years on, Tony. Should be a great day.
We're just getting a Carlton legend here. Tony DeVolfo wrangling legends of the 1968 team.
He's got
Ian Robertson.
We'll get you on the way through.
Yeah, what do we got to say? Anything and everything.
Yeah. Ian, does it feel like 50 years since you ran out and represented the Carlton Football Club in that drought-breaking premiership victory all those years ago?
Don't mention 50. I'm quite prepared to cope with about 20, but 50, that means I'm 72. I don't want to know about it. You know, what you could do in the days when you were 22, 32 and 42, you struggle to do when you're 72, I can guarantee you.
But thinking back on that great day for Carlton, you know, first premiership since 47, ironically against Essendon, the team you beat.
Yep.
When you think back on that game and the occasion, Ian, what sticks most in your mind?
We kicked less goals than the opposition. We had a 17-year-old in the centre playing on an all-Australian or Victorian centre-man. It was drought-breaking. There's no doubt that that was fantastic because supporters, it's a bit like now, you know, supporters are just absolutely wishing that they can, not necessarily overnight, but win some games where they're competitive, which was happening up, you know, like a couple of years ago. But we had Brian Kekovich, we had Billy Bennett that didn't play much football for Carlton after that, which was sad. As I said, Brent. Sid came and played the following year. Sid was the runner. And we celebrated madly. I think there were times, I think at that stage, because of the breakthrough, we didn't go to bed. We went to we didn't go to training, obviously, but anyway, we had a great time.
Do you think it set the scene then for all the success that followed after 1968?
68 had Quirk and Crane and myself from Gippsland. But I think after that, pretty well soon after that, the zoning came in and we Carlton benefited there. You know, the Southby, Keogh, Mackay, who were integral parts, Ashman. The mentality, Barras was still there in 70 when we performed a bloody football miracle. And 72, it was another great coaching and behind the scenes performance to beat Richmond after being beaten in the second semi-final replay. And we played St Kilda, who were tough, so we played a hard game in that era. And then there was a space from 72 to 79, and it's interesting. I don't know whether it's administration. I mean, what can you do today? You just can't manufacture a premiership. You can't recruit people who you can guarantee, and if you do, you've got to spend a lot of money and make sure it's a wise investment.
I'd be putting you and a couple of the blokes into that room in a time machine. That's what I'd be wanting to do.
Yeah, well, look, these kids, it's the easiest thing in the world. I did 15 years sitting in a comfortable box, commentating and trying to encourage people to understand what Australian football was about. That's the easiest thing in the world. I don't have to cop the bumps. I don't have to try and anticipate how the ball bounces. And that's what these kids have got to do today. So you need to find 18 Greg Williams, 18 Craig Bradleys, 18 Stephen Kernahans, and it's impossible to do it. So what you have to sit and wait. This Dow, I think, will be okay. I'm a big fan of Mackay. I think Mackay, to me, is like I was when I started. He doesn't understand that he belongs out there. And you've got to play about 50 games to understand We know, Tone. You know, we're fraction old. I'm not sure how old you are. But you understand. They've got to play, and they've got to learn. And the biggest thing they've got to understand that what I've seen, the speed of this game is incredible.
Yeah.
So if you get it, you know, I think I was told straight away when I started, get it and kick it, because the worst thing is to get it and get caught, because your backside drags on the ground for a couple of seconds. If you get it and kick it, there's no reason for you to feel that you've let the side down. That's what I think, anyway.
Ian, a final question perhaps before you have to go to the luncheon.
I've got a beer over there, Tony. I've got a big beer that I'm going to drink. I've just come down from Milan.
Still celebrating that 68 premiership.
I think that might be my beer, actually, so keep your heads off. But listen, Peter McLean, I should say, is no longer with us.
Yeah.
Wes Lofts is gone.
Yep.
Barass is still with us.
Yep.
Can you have something to say about Ron, you know, the impact that Barassi had on you and the team?
Enormous. I mean, he was a winner for coming from Melbourne. He showed us, I remember a mid-season trip, we had a table tennis competition and Eric Sarich had busted his shoulder and we went down to Torquay. He played Gary Crane in the final of this table tennis tournament that we had. And he's got his left shoulder in a sling from being dislocated.
Yeah.
He won, there's a rat bag, David Mackay. He won champion kick contests on Channel 7. He won handball competitions on Channel 7 because he was so competitive. So you had to be taken up by... the fellow who just walked past, David Mackay, he could mark anything at training. You know who stood beside him to try and mark it? Barassi. If he thought he'd make Mackay a better player by showing him the competitive nature of the coach who wasn't playing at training in marking drills. And that was the way he was. I mean, we were lucky we had Nick. Mm. We're lucky. I look Nick in the eye like you would. I'm looking you in the eye. He's 6'2" and shrinking, right? And he played 320 games in the ruck. He knocked Tomo out, competed with Don McKenzie and John Schultz. Is he waiting for me, Mackay? Because I'm going to give him a mouthful. Tony, it's always a pleasure to have a chat to you.
An absolute pleasure to have a chat.
Yeah.
Well, Swan, you weren't there in 68, of course. I think you were still up at the sticks. And you did play your first game on the great E.J. Whitney in 69, but you were there in 70, of course, in 72. You were there again in 79, if memory serves, in 81. So you had a good go at it. But when you came to Carlton Swan, obviously the team had come off that success. Did you feel within your heart of hearts that the club was on the cusp of a great era?
Well, because they had the best coach that I ever played under Barassi. He was just terrific. And it's just his ability to generate players and to generate interest around the club and to make everyone feel at home and give you clear directions about the way he wanted you to play was just outstanding.
We just heard from Ian Robertson then about his competitiveness, about Barassi's competitiveness. What did that do to the playing group? How did that inspire the playing group?
It definitely inspired the playing group. He was, Robbo probably mentioned his ability to play table tennis. He was not a bit like his football. He probably wasn't the greatest player in terms of skill, but just his incredible competitiveness. I remember playing table tennis, he just kept hitting the ball back from impossible positions for about 10 minutes when he was trying to win his way through to being the champion table tennis player at the club. But it wasn't just that, you know, if you're out having kick to kick, he'd want to be going for marks and all of those sort of things, really, that competitive spirit that he embodied and showed certainly came through to the players, and the players, well, yeah, everyone wanted to beat him. They wanted to beat him playing table tennis. They wanted to take a mark over him at training.
Did anyone beat him at table tennis?
I think Brent Croswell might have beaten him. So it was pretty rare because he was just so competitive, and just his ability to hit the ball back from impossible positions was just uncanny.
Is that what got Brent Croswell into the Hall of Fame?
No, I don't think so. No, look, Croswell was an incredible player and an incredible athlete. And, he was. He just came to the club at the right time, and I think he was the youngest player to play in 68, so that was a pretty impressive performance. Then go on to play with the club again in 70,
yeah,
and playing well in grand finals, not just for Carlton, but for North Melbourne. He was just an incredible finals player. He was a great player.
Now, Brett Croswell is an apology today, Swan. He can't make it across from the Apple Isle. He's in Hobart. I actually spoke to him last week and he was sounded fantastic, which was really heartening. He was remarkably upbeat and genuinely disappointed he couldn't be here. Another player that sends his apologies also, Swan, and he finished up just before you started, but your paths may have crossed, was Brian Kekovic. Now, it's unbelievable that he's kicked 4 of 7 in that grand final in his last game. He was 33 or 34 games in, was told by the doctors to give the game away or he'd end up in a wheelchair, and he never played again. Did you actually get to meet him at all? You came in 69. Was he already at the door, or do you recall him being around the place?
He was already out the door, which is unfortunate. I must admit, I saw the footage of him kicking those goals, a beautiful left-foot kick from all angles, and he was a terrific player. Incredible that both the full forward and centre-half forward, Kekovic and Billy Bennett, both weren't there the next year. They'd both moved on. And, look, I'm surprised Kekovic didn't stay, but I didn't realise it was an injury that ended his career, but he was certainly a very impressive player, just watching him in that bit of footage from 1968.
I briefly had a word with him in Perth this week, Swan, and unfortunately he's not in the best of health, nor is his mother, but he asked that I call him back in 6 weeks, and I've penciled into the calendar for 6 weeks from now will be actually the 28th of September, the 50th anniversary to the day, so hopefully we'll learn a bit more about his life and times. But to be back here today, Swan, been a tough year for the club, and you follow the current players pretty closely. Are you heartened by what you see, even given, you know, the disastrous year it's been, at least in terms of ladder position? What do you take from the year?
Well, I think there's light at the end of the tunnel, but I'm not sure whether it's bright light or the sudden aurora. But no, I think they're on the right track. Like, when you have players, you know, Cripps is just a brilliant leader, and I'm sure he'll have perhaps a more prominent leadership role in 2019. Cruiser has been very unfortunate with his injury. I thought with his heart condition, hopefully he'll get over that and be back next year, because I think when he's playing, Carlton are a much better team. So and Curnow, well, you know, he's just a superstar of the future.
Are you a fan of Harry Mackay, Paddy Dow, those young players too?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, they've improved markedly over the year. Harry's going to be a terrific forward for Carlton. And Dow, well, I must admit, I thought he took quite a while to get going, but some of his body movement in the last couple of games has just been outstanding, and he's going to be a wonderful player for Carlton through the midfield.
Can I just ask you a personal question? Which of the four premierships means the most to you? Which was, I guess, the most exciting?
Without doubt, 70, before the biggest crowd that has ever watched a football game.
Yeah.
Brassey as coach, 44 points down at halftime against Collingwood to get up and beat them.
Yeah.
When half the Collingwood supporters had gone home thinking they'd won the game, was fantastic. So that was just a wonderful game, and I'm just so fortunate that I was part of such a wonderful part of Carlton's history, and to beat Collingwood was an absolute bonus.
I suspect half the Carlton team went over at halftime thinking they'd lost, actually.
Exactly.
Swan too. But
what was the halftime address?
Well, I think I can't remember it exactly, but I think Brassey was concerned that we were playing a kick and mark style of game, and we were kicking it to a wall of Collingwood. They were setting up very well across half back line, and his philosophy was, if we can get some handball going, we can actually move the ball forward and kick it over that wall, and that effectively worked in the second half. So you know, that was, I know the handball stats don't show it exactly, but I think we did play much more of a play on style in the second half, and that helped us get over Collingwood in that massive second half.
And you are, of course, the only man in Carlton history to have played 3 grand final victories over Collingwood, are you not?
I think so, yes. I think Eddie Maguire reminds me every time he sees me.
Well, it's great to see you today. Great to see you in you know, ideal playing condition. You look like you can still run out. It'll be a great day for the club. Hope you enjoy it, and we'll share a shandy or two later on.
Look forward to it, Tony. Thanks, Tony.
Well, it's a great pleasure now at the Carlton Football Club Hall of Fame and 1968 Premiership Reunion to introduce a man who, fair to say, was best of field on that big day in September 1968, Gary Crane. Gary, welcome back to the club. A great day for yourself and your old teammates, no doubt.
Yes, it is a fantastic day, and it's great to meet all the old boys. Yeah, we've certainly, some are completely bald, others are fat.
You're some, neither, some it has to be said.
I'm laughing.
Yeah, yeah. Can I ask you, I mean, we know Carlton actually had the inaugural Norm Smith medalist when it was a medal. Do you regard yourself as a Norm Smith medalist almost by default?
Wouldn't that be lovely? Mm. There's a song about that, and I'd love to be able to sing it. But, yeah, that would be a fantastic bit of praise, getting a retrospective Norm Smith medal. I can only say I'd be rapt, but I don't expect to get it. But, wow, how it would be.
Gary, what do you remember of that day in 68? You know, people say it was windswept. Big crowd, obviously. What are your recollections of the day?
My recollections of the day were quite, I can still remember my first kick, a goal. The ball came loose between the goal and centre-half forward, and I was running into an open goal and actually kicked it, to my surprise.
And you must have thought, geez, it's going to be a good day today.
Well, I went back to the centre feeling pretty good.
And, of course, goals were hard to come by that day, Gary. It was a pretty windswept old game, wasn't it?
It certainly was, and it was a funny day because I can remember the fellow they called Kookaburra, or he wouldn't shut up, Alec Epis. He was switched to me in the last quarter, and I was one of those players that never spoke, and Alec was trying to talk to me, and I put him off his game by not speaking to him. I do remember that.
It worked for Bruce Doyle.
Bruce did that all his life, and how good was he?
Exactly. We spoke to Robbo earlier. He mentioned the celebrations that took place afterwards. What do you recall of the immediate aftermath of winning the grand final in 68?
Yeah, good point. Unfortunately, that's something I've always thought, well, I didn't celebrate it enough. I was in hotels at the time, and I'd go from the game straight back to the pub, work, and then go out to the function. So how have things changed now? I was only talking to Cade Simpson a few weeks ago saying how things have changed. I said to Cade, when I was 34, I had three kids. I was running a pub 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and we got paid bugger all. So how things have changed.
Yeah, very, very true. And Gary, when Tony mentioned we spoke to Robbo earlier, he talked about that great, you know, that midfield, yourself, him, Brian Quirk, all country boys. And I think back to some of the players that also played. Brian Kegovich was Myrtleford. Gags was from down at Yarram. What was it about the country players that gave so much to the club?
I believe in that era, having played country football on smaller grounds, not great conditions, it prepared players to be able to win their own football, because there was no place to hide on these small country games, so you got used to winning your own ball. And I think you'll go through the successful Carlton teams of that era, there was many players in the side that could win the hard ball. And I believe teams now have an out of balance of outside players to inside players that can win the hard ball. And when you haven't got enough players winning the hard ball, that's when the team seems to fail.
The figure of Ron Barassi looms very large. Your experiences of him?
Yes, very memorable. I wore his number my first year, and of course he rang me and asked me, could he have it? And I thought, well, if I'm smart, I'll give it to him because I do need a game. And that's how I came to get number 6, yeah. Barassi was I don't think he'd get away with what he did or what he said to players in those times. Things have changed. Players are a bit more precious now. We had to cope or get out. In fact, I remember one night at training, Barassi was always on my back. I had a lot of faults and he was trying to mend them. And I yelled out some unkind remark to him, and he sent me off the ground and said, wait for me after training. So after training, I've waited quite a while, and of course he's came up when he was finally ready and said, Gary, it's like this, if you don't like it, nick off. Mm. And of course I didn't nick off. I stayed there, but that's how he was. He said he was trying to prepare me to do the hard things and do the proper things, and if I wasn't prepared to do it, nick off.
Well, you obviously were prepared to do it, Gary, because you were there in 1970 and again in 72, I think. You were there for the...
68, 69, 70, 72, 73.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite of the three premierships?
68, 73.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, 68, I had a good game. 73, I had a very good game. 73, I thought we should have won. I think that was the day Big Nick was knocked out by Fowler, was it?
Correct.
And, yeah, it was one of those days where things had have been a little bit different. Carlton would have had another win, and we're so close and yet so far.
Surprised to hear you say 70 doesn't loom as large as those other two that you mentioned.
It doesn't in my... I thought the question was for me as a player how well I played. I don't believe I played as well in 70 as some of the other games. I wasn't 100% fit. I'd had the flu all week. Probably shouldn't have played, but I did play. Thank God I did. Mm. But it wasn't one of my best games.
Well, Gary, we're glad that you did. We're glad that you played in 72. We're glad you played in 68. And we're glad you played so many games for the Carlton Football Club. A young kid from the sticks who made good. And you still support Carlton as much as you ever did. The team's obviously been down. But do you see hope for the team, Gary?
I certainly do. We've got some young kids coming on very nicely. And I'm really pleased with the way Bolton coaches... the enthusiasm, and he's always upbeat. He's never lets defeat get in his manner. He always finds a positive thing about them, and I believe with this attitude, Carlton will finally go on. And I must say that over the last few months, I feel a bigger part of Carlton since I finished playing, because they're getting us older players back, trying to show the younger players that regardless of where the team is on the ladder, we're still a great club. We stick together and we will have success.
And, you know, and 50 years on, you'll still have most of your hair and well, fit into a suit that you got married in.
How did you know that? Well, it does go to show how broke I am.
Gary, it's great talking to you, mate. Thanks very much. Enjoy the rest of the day. It's been a great day for the club, and no doubt for yourself and the heroes of 68. All power to you, Gary.
Thank you so much. It's an honour to come and do this presentation or whatever we call it. But I can only say that football's great, and go Blues.
Well said.
Well said.
Thanks, mate.
Well, Lance, congratulations. It's a great moment for yourself and the Whitnall family. You've been inducted into the Carlton Football Club's Hall of Fame. You had a lot of great moments for the Carlton Football Club, but where does this one stand for you?
Yeah, I'm absolutely speechless still. I'm still in shock that I've been inducted to the Carlton Hall of Fame, and you know, I really can't believe it. It's not an accolade that you strive for. You try and win premierships and best and fairest and along the line, but this stuff is just unbelievable, and I'm over the moon.
Your father, Graham, who himself was a great player for Carlton, I think through 66 games thereabouts, he jetted in from up north today, I'm told.
Yeah, half his luck. He's been living in Darwin for the last 12 months in the nice warm weather, but he's flown down yesterday and down for the weekend just to be here for this function. So, yeah, he's just as wrapped as I am and quite surprised as well.
Lance, as a supporter of my vintage, I'm absolutely thrilled to see you get the honour, because I think it's thoroughly deserved. You were always great to watch, and you were always a very steady, reliable pair of hands. Your playing career is over 200 games. There's a bag of goals in there. The highlight for you?
My highlight would have to be the 99 prelim. Any Carlton supporter or any Essendon supporter, that game always comes up, and to be able to kick a goal late in the game to sort of give us the real big chance of going through was just a big buzz for me. We all want to play in grand finals and try and win them, but that prelim was amazing. Especially more so that I've grown up as an Essendon supporter as a kid. To do that in that game, I was that was a buzz for me, big time.
the sidestep. It's still magical to watch.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Not sure about that now, but yeah, I was just enjoyed the moment, and it was huge. I loved it.
You related a great story during the week, Lance, to me about the person in the smoker's stand you were waving to after you kicked that big goal. Could you tell us that story?
Yeah, that story's probably got a little bit longer as I've gone out of football. But at the time, I was just over the moon and wrapped. And I've got a close family member that is a diehard Essendon supporter, and he was in the members that day. And I didn't know exactly where he'd be sitting, but I knew he'd be in that area. And I was just stoked, and I knew he'd be heartbroken because he's an Essendon supporter, but rapt that I kicked the goal. So
you didn't see him, but I know that he saw you.
I know he's seen me. I've heard all about it since, and he said he slouched down in his chair, but then 30 seconds later stood up and clapped. So
Lance, you came to Carlton at a time when the great Stephen Kernaghan was ending his career and Earl Spaulding was on his way out. You were a kid of 17, then asked to fill the breach left by the great man at centre forward. You seem to fall into place really quickly. How was it that you were able to do that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, as I just touched on then, Kernaghan, his last year was my first year, and he spent a lot of that year injured. And I can't thank him enough for the way he sort of inducted me into the team and tried to and coached me, teach me how to play the position, because he knew sort of he was on the outer, finishing up. So the way he sort of went about it, and I love the man. He's a great man. And yeah, I was probably just in the right spot at the right time when, if those blokes weren't injured, I wouldn't be playing. There's no chance. So, just right spot at the right time.
You're a former Carlton captain. What does that honour mean to you?
To be named captain in Carlton, that was a massive thrill for me. And, Carlton have had some great captains over the years and some great players. And just to lead this club, and, I couldn't find the words at the time to match it. But I was just over the moon to be named captain of the club.
As Tony said, your dad played 66 games. You're over 200. What was it like to actually surpass your dad's game record?
Yeah, well, it was something I'd never ever sort of set out to do. I just wanted to be on a Carlton list. I just wanted to play one game, and then when I got that one game, I wanted to play two games. And I actually can't remember the day that I passed him as the games things. But I think it was in my third year that I played pretty quickly to 100. So I got him up pretty quick. But yeah, I mean, Dad was a great player. He was just had a few injuries, and he was around a long time and in a good era where it was hard to get into the team. So, I mean, he probably could have played a few more games, but it is what it is. And, I'm thrilled.
You're a very loyal person too, Lance. I've seen you quite often down the rooms after more recently losses than wins, it has to be said. But you're there, when the team needs you most. And it seems that with passing of time, your loyalty and your love for Carlton only grows stronger.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I've loved the club since the day I walked in here. And the players, it's hard to go down the rooms now when they're losing, but those players need support. I remember going through that time, and when I used to look up and see a past player in the rooms, it was a good thrill to me to, thinking that these guys are still behind us and still backing us. And I love to give my support when I can now. I don't get to as many games as I like to, just because the kids are playing footy and basketball and stuff like that, so I don't get to as many, but when I do, I try and show my support to the boys.
We've got a couple there going around. Yes, so might follow the old man's footsteps.
Has the Whitnell football brain been passed to the next generation, please?
I've got a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old. My 17-year-old hates football, doesn't play football at all, and he lives and breathes basketball. My 15-year-old currently plays football and basketball, and yeah, he goes okay at it. He's just starting to make the TAC Cup under 15 squads and stuff like that. So he's in the program.
Who does he barrack for?
Carlton. He barracks for Carlton. Yeah, he's a Carlton boy. And
just keep Lee Williams, your cousin, away from him, all right?
Yeah, I try and keep the Essendon boys away from him, that's for sure.
All right, Lance. Look, lovely to speak to you under this occasion. It's a great moment for yourself. And Tony put it really well where he said, you're a player that so many of us have admired through a tough period for the club. And you flew the flag and led the way as captain of the Carlton Football Club. A great honour, thoroughly deserved.
Absolutely.
All the very best for today and beyond, Lance, and we'll see you in the rooms.
Thank you very much, guys, and good luck. Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
Let's go straight into it. I'm so grateful, Brendan, and under these circumstances as well. You're obviously aware now of your induction into the Carlton Hall of Fame.
Yeah, look, mate, it's fabulous, really, because it's a little ironic too, I mean, I left Carlton and I spent 6 years there and left. Didn't want to go particularly, but I had problems with George Harris.
Yes.
I don't want to bring that up particularly, but
yes.
He was he broke a verbal handshake agreement, not him particularly, but people representing him.
Yes.
And I had no choice but to leave. But
right.
Yeah, look, it was about, I think it was about $5,600 that we're talking about here, so okay. You can imagine what a pittance it was.
And
I mean, when you think about it. And so I left Carlton, but it's wonderful because I love Carlton. It was the first club I went to. We played at Prince's Park in the most beautiful surroundings you could imagine. As you know, that area around there is just gorgeous.
Yes.
The ground was just about as good as you could get. It was beautiful, beautifully shaped, and it was. It just had. Yeah, it was just exquisite. I think because of the ground and the surroundings, you know, it was just the premier place to be. I mean. You know, visually, it was the premier place to be, you know.
Yeah, as you're speaking, Brent, and painting the picture, I'm looking out from the boardroom of the club out onto the ground right now, and it's lovely to hear your reminiscences of the place as I look. It was a special place for you, and as you say, the opportunity to really take on the great game of Australian rules football, it must have been a massive moment for you, a young boy from Tasmania coming across to the mainland. Was it a difficult?
I came across in '67 as a guest.
Yes.
And it was mesmerising for someone to come across, and then to, I was immature. My body was immature.
Yeah.
And I was just a young kid, and to come to Carlton with these guys dressed in navy blue outfits. The smell of the rooms, the atmosphere in the ground was just extraordinary. 40,000-50,000 people, and it was in that old stand, I think the Heatley stand. There's something about a ground like that.
Yes,
with all the people in that ground that and the atmosphere that I think that it surmounts the. Atmosphere in some of these stadiums now,
Yes.
They look to me a bit antiseptic.
Yes.
And you go from one ground to another. But the first game I saw was a game between North and Carlton.
Yes.
And it was just fascinating. I mean, just to see these guys and to go into the rooms and actually see them. It was just. It was a wonderful experience.
and of course, the timing's everything, Brent. I mean, these were exciting times with, the much-heralded Barassi move across, and Carlton was on the rise.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The game was different then.
Yes.
The game was dramatic then. The game was very dramatic. If you watch a game of football today, you go there and you see the ground just covered in people before the game. They're one side practicing their kicking, the other players are doing this and that. The opposition's out there doing something. There's lots of people with water bottles. When the game starts, there can be 13 other people on the ground at any one time with water bottles. So the game is littered with people now.
Yes.
But before the game, they've got all these people. Now, in those days, what happened was no one was on the ground. There were policemen around the edge of the ground. The seconds were finished, and you waited then for this tremendously dramatic moment.
Yes.
You had the banners up, and when the players would come down and run down, that was the only time you saw them. You never saw them prior to the ground in different jerseys.
Yes.
So all the kinds of drama.
Yep.
Now, if you were an impresario, for example, you were trying to. To produce this show, the one thing would do it like that. They did it in '68, '69, and '70, and so on. You wouldn't have it like it is today because you wouldn't. It's just not dramatic.
No, the mystique is lost, and there's no aura.
There's no aura. And what came? This is the other point. What came down the race wasn't just a kind of facsimile of players. It was a kind of all these odd bots. Big Nick had crashed through it. Massive leg, brassy, any strange kind of movements. And then you had all Sergio with his socks down, his bandy legs, and you've got a great amount of physical diversity. So, and these players symbolise different things.
Yes,
you know, they each, now, today, none of the players symbolise anything.
No.
Those days, you could have bad men.
Yes.
You know, you've got this bloke hit someone on Saturday. So, yep. So for me, it was just... The game was full of drama.
Yes, very true. Brent, for the record, was it Berkeley Cox that really discovered you, so to speak, when you were at Scotch College?
Well, I suppose they say it was. I played a game at... I was at Scotch College, but they didn't see me play for Scotch or anything like that. I just came in to watch a game at City South in Launceston, and then I was standing there, and the thirds were playing under 19, you know.
Yep.
And they said to me, you want to have a game, something, and they got me the Guernseys, and they got me Guernseys and some boots. I went out at half time and just played to City South.
Right.
I suspect that Berkeley Cox. Was instrumental, and that would make sense.
Right.
I thought I was good enough to play in the
scenes. Yes. And of course, Brent, you know, there will be many Carlton people that will so fondly remember you when you played, who will say that this honour is long, long overdue. And yet the timing is quite interesting, because it's 50 years, obviously, this year that you ran out for the first time, that game against Geelong in the opening round of 68. You're a boy of 17 then. Do you remember that moment?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I mean, the fact is, you know, I was... the club may have... You know, the fact that I left the club, I mean, they probably felt that, you know, had a bit upset with me, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe that explains some of the reasons for the delay. But, you know, I was a kind of volatile player, as reported a few times.
Yep.
I don't think that helped it particularly. And the first game, I think it was 15 or 16 kicks or something like that. Mm. The bloke I played on was one of those beautiful sort of players. You can imagine a beautifully balanced player, and he got 25 kicks, best on the ground, Dennis Marshall.
Yes.
And, you know, I was just overwhelmed. I didn't perform badly, but for the first time.
Yes.
But if I hadn't been so overawed, I mean, I could have, you know, done quite well for myself with it. But it's very hard for a 17-year-old to actually... My body hadn't even developed. I was a kid, really.
In closing, Brent, I'm conscious of time, but when you reflect back on your days at Carlton, look, admittedly, you know, they didn't end as perhaps they didn't go to script, as you might say. But do you look back fondly on your time at the club? And
yeah, very much so. I love the players. I got on well with them there. I'd love to be at this function to see the players and the blokes I played with, because I would just love to see them. And I'm really sorry, because I've got this problem of balance and stuff, and I can't. But that's the great shame, that I couldn't be there and see the blokes in 68, and indeed other players that I would have loved to see and that I played with. I mean, you get so close to blokes that you play with all the time, and you know, that's the story. I'm sad that I can't be with them. I'll never see them again, you know. If I can't really travel very well, and I can't even get in the car hardly. But look, I better go now. But it's lovely. It's lovely talking to you. Now, I wish I could talk a little longer.
Mark Murphy. Great to talk to you, Mark, this occasion for the club. Great day for the club, the Hall of Fame and the 1968 Premiership reunion. Current captain of the Carlton Football Club, as a current player, what do you make of this experience, Mark?
Oh, it's always good to come to these events and to recognise our past players, and a lot of our past players are great to the game. So it's really important that all our young guys understand the history of the footy club, and it's a good occasion to come to and actually sit on a table with some past players as well, and supporters who have been there for a long time and supported the club. It's really good to hear some of the old stories, and they're always very humorous, a lot of the stories as well. So it's a really good day for the whole club to get together.
I think what was significant about the players that spoke today from 68 was that, to a man, they seemed to believe that the current team was heading the right way and good times were not that far away.
Yeah, that's right. They were speaking about it being 21 years since they'd won their last premiership. it's almost like we're in a bit of a similar boat. It's been, was it 23 years since we've won a flag, and it was interesting actually hearing the age profile of the group as well. They were average age of 22 or 23. So I think it's good for a lot of our young guys to hear that you can make a big impact at a young age, and I'm certainly driving those guys to do that.
Yeah, the message there is that it can be done.
It can be done, and yeah, even just look at the current situation of the AFL, that clubs can jump pretty quick, and we're under no illusion that we've got to work really hard, and I think we've certainly got the talent in our list to do that. We've just got to make sure we stay injury-free, work really hard. That was something that the guys from 68 talked about. They were hard and tough, and that comes from training. So that's what it's all about.
And a word on the Hall of Fame inductees, Brent Croswell and Lance Whitnell. You probably haven't met Brent Croswell, I dare say, but Lance you would have seen around, along the way. What are your thoughts on the two inductees?
Yeah, Brent's son spoke brilliantly, and a lot of what the guys up there from the 68 team spoke about, his son actually mentioned that as well from the words from Brent, so that was really good to hear. And Lance was a big figure when I first got into the club, not in size-wise, but just reputation. He was always a really smart footballer, and I suppose I came into it when it was right at the back end of his career, but he won a BNF in my first year here at the footy club, so it was someone that I respected because he played at such a high level. But it's a really good occasion to see all of Lance's family here and supporting him, and the love he has for the footy club's terrific, and it was great to be here to see him speak.
And how are you going in the run home to the end of the Home and Aways? You've got two more in you, do you think?
Yeah, well, I've missed a fair bit of footy this year, so I'm actually feeling okay. So it's a really important couple of weeks for the footy club. We want to play a really strong brand of football in the next 2 weeks, and hopefully put a few smiles on some fans who have stuck with us this year. It's been a really tough journey, but we've just got to keep on working hard, stick at it, so we get into pre-season all ready to go next year.
And a final one, Mark, is, you know, record membership this year and almost 700 people in the room today. That must tell you that the supporters are right behind the team and the club.
Yeah, well, having 56,000 members is a huge result. I know that the membership team are driving to increase that next year, but yeah, just seeing all the fans in here sharing some of the past glories, but they're also really keen to see us succeed. So I certainly know it's a huge club with a big supporter base. Love to see as many jump on board, because it's certainly the list that we've got at the moment. There's a lot of premiership players there and waiting, so hopefully that's sooner rather than later.
Well said, Captain. All the very best for the remainder of the season. Lovely to see you under these circumstances today, and making me post a winner of the weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. On behalf of Tony Moclair, this is Tony DeBolfo signing off at the Carlton Football Club Hall of Fame and 1968 Premiership Reunion. It's been a fabulous afternoon for the football club. Almost 700 people in the room, and we have seen both Lance Whitnell and Brent Croswell inducted to the Carlton Football Club Hall of Fame. Been a privilege to be here to send this message to you. We've spoken with David McKay, Ian Robertson, Gary Crane, Lance Whitnell. A special message from Brent Croswell in Hobart, Tasmania. We thank you for listening, and we will see you back in the studio very soon. Bye for now.